You're tuning in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
They wanted to come down black against white. That's how they deal with everything in the city of Benton Harbor. They want to put you against me, me against you. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. As long as you don't touch them. You know, as long as you don't climb that ladder and get up there with them, you can fight down here with me. That's all they want. It's always remember, it's the haves against the have-nots.
People's Tribune Radio provides a source of revolutionary audio programming to people interested in changing society. It is produced in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribuno del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America. Today's show tells the story of the fight for justice in Benton Harbor, Michigan. The Reverend Edward Pinckney and a growing group of people from the community who see clearly the problems they face are joining together for change. PT Radio will share their story. A story of racism and corruption, of gentrification and corporate rule, of the overall assault on democracy we are seeing building across the United States. Throughout the show, we discover what occurs when someone who stands up for real change, who ceaselessly pursues justice for their community and fights for what's right, becomes targeted by the powerful few. The story of Benton Harbor is more than the story of one man in one town. We begin with Reverend Edward Pinckney, describing Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Benton Harbor have always been one of the communities that's filled with poverty. Matter of fact, we have 65% of the people that live in Benton Harbor are unemployed. 90% of the people that live in Benton Harbor live below the poverty level. We have a major problem there. What we need right now is someone to come in and provide jobs and opportunity for the people that live in Benton Harbor.
Dr. Don Tynes is a community activist who has worked with Reverend Edward Pinckney in Benton Harbor.
I came to Benton Harbor in 2000, and in 2002 got involved forming a Future Doctors, Future Leaders program, a college-bound program, and because of those activities within the community, me and Reverend Pinckney paths crossed, and then I saw that he was sincere and true to try to do the upliftment of Benton Harbor, and therefore what he did is bring me part of the group, and my job was to help the people see a new vision of themselves. And what that meant is that they had to feel that they were worthy. Benton Harbor is a very depressed community where the people did not know that they were worthy of respect, worthy of dignity, and worthy of justice. And so the number one problem that the people in the community were saying was injustice, that the justice system was an unjust system. If you had a black behind, you did more time. What Reverend Pinckney was doing at that time was just tracking the cases and seeing that age, race, and the same crime did equal different times. And so what we did is that the people didn't know that they had options. And what the Reverend was doing with the program was to expose them to different options. Benton Harbor is a battleground. It's a for where injustice is prevailing, and it's separated by a little landmass. And I think what he brought was a sensitivity that was needed. Most of the leaders here don't even know that this is a real city. Mm-hmm. Therefore, not knowing it's a real city, they think other people come in and dictate. Me being blessed to be exposed to Coleman Young and down in Detroit, the city dictates the policies and what person will put this on their land and how these factors will go. The people up here were not educated that way because most of them have just been here. And so they were kind of almost like migrant farmer-based kind of mentality from the South. And so therefore, the old expression is they always had to look the boss. Where what happened in other cities, like Detroit, they used to tell boss get lost.
Reverend Pinckney's wife, Dorothy Pinckney, grew up in Benton Harbor.
As a family of eight, we were happy. You know, as children, our mother provided whatever we need, or she did the best she could. But deep down inside, I just knew there had to be something better. I went to a meeting one time that was held at a local church here, and it was a meeting where young black women and mothers were crying out for help. They were facing the same problems. Their husband received jail time. They were innocent but yet accused and got jail time, and young black women were crying out for their children, fathers. That's when I really took notice. I'm going, man, there's a serious problem. And just the way they were crying out for help, I mean, it just, you know, touched my heart. And I'm going, there's got to be something.
To address the community's needs for justice, Reverend Pinckney founded the Black Autonomous Network Community Organization, or BANCO.
BANCO was formed in 1999, what we started doing, we started marching in at the courthouse 2 days out of the week, Tuesdays and Wednesdays. We marched for 5 hours a day. Then we would monitor the courthouse from 8:30 in the morning to 11:30, then from 1 to 4:30. That's how we got started.
In June 2003, an uprising took place in the city of Benton Harbor that received nationwide attention. We hear from Reverend Edward Pinckney and Dr. Tynes about what caused this uprising.
A young man by the name of T-Shirt. And what happened was one of the police officers chased him down and bumped the back of his motorcycle and caused him to go into a building. He died instantly. During that process, the officers that bumped the car and another police officer stood over the body and gave each other a high five because they knew he was dead. They denied it openly, but there was eyewitnesses to the incident. That's one of the reasons why we had the uprise.
Dr. Tynes adds,
see, what happened that night, you know, the young man had got chased, got killed, and his accusation, he was killed, and there wasn't an accident. But what happened that night was an officer who's used to kind of oppressing the people decided to break up a vigil, a candlelight vigil, but he didn't understand that's the same thing as a funeral. Mm-hmm. And that was what set the fire off. When he asked them to disperse, they were mad. But then when he went to try to dismantle the memorial, that's what caused the riot. And then when the chief came down and told his officers, shoot to kill, and there were women and children in there, then that just escalated it. Because he was an African-American from out of town who moved here and had no love for the people. And at the center of that was a Reverend Pinckney. So we were the ones who had to walk the streets and talk to the people and do interviews and find out exactly what they said the problem was.
This is People's Tribune Radio. We're addressing the current struggle taking place in Benton Harbor, Michigan. As Reverend Pinckney describes, Benton Harbor is a town of poverty, but it wasn't always this way. The city was a manufacturing town, and Whirlpool, the big employer. But like many other companies, Whirlpool found it could make higher profits by moving jobs elsewhere and implementing new technologies to replace workers, leaving behind devastation and ruin. This process of deindustrialization and automation have been repeated in countless cities across the nation. Sometimes this is followed by the cleanup of impoverished areas, and that's when gentrification begins. After the poor are forced out, the rich move in and cities and neighborhoods get reinvented and repackaged to appeal to the real estate and tourist industries. Developers get land cheap and reap huge profits building expensive housing, retail, and tourist facilities. They are often able to put the cost of infrastructure and development onto local governments and taxpayers in exchange for false promises of economic growth for all. As Banco fought injustice in the courts, they began to find what was the push behind the development. Reverend Pinckney, Dorothy Pinckney, and some community members speak about Whirlpool and the drive to gentrify Benton Harbor.
This is what Whirlpool did. We had 2,500 jobs. Now we are down to about 1,100. So what they have done now, they purchased Maytag. They're going to bring back an additional 400 executive jobs. When you speak of Cornerstone and Whirlpool are really the same identical people. If you work for Whirlpool, you work for Cornerstone. You work for Cornerstone, you work for Whirlpool. Cornerstone own more land in Benton Harbor than the city of Benton Harbor do. And that's because of Whirlpool. Actually, it's Whirlpool who actually own the land, but Cornerstone is the person named on the deed, a cornerstone in every community. That's what we're saying. There's a cornerstone in every single community. And this cornerstone owns all the land. Matter of fact, they own all the lakefront land. And by them owning this land, we know that Whirlpool owns the land.
They had said over 20-some years ago that they were going to let this city get to a point and they were going to come and take it all back over. And that's where this big golf course and all of these things that's coming in. And very few of the citizens even play golf, probably. And so who's the golf course for? Who's these the big yachts and things on boating and everything going to come in? A lot of us can't even afford to even ride on a boat, let's only own one.
The problem with that, too, is with all this new construction going around, okay, the building, the homes, that the elderly people, the senior citizen, or even just the citizens in Benton Harbor, you know definitely their taxes is going to go up. When their taxes go up because of all this, you know, outbuilding or whatever, development, the taxes go up, they're going to tax us right out of our own homes. We won't
that's
be able
right.
to afford
our
them. And then what's going to happen? All the rich or the influential people will be here in Benton Harbor and we'll be back somewhere else.
Some people think Whirlpool is doing a lot of good things for the city. You don't think that they're doing good things for the city?
Well, they might be doing good things for the city, but not the people that live within the city.
So, in other words, they're hurting a lot of people, is what you're saying.
Sure they are. Just think of the unemployment rate, the homelessness. There's so many people, it's been reported, that living under bridges. There's a lot of abandoned homes that are boarded up. I mean, where are they going? Where are they going when the city become a tourist attraction? And that's my main focus.
To challenge the impact development would have on the majority of the people in Benton Harbor, Reverend Pinckney and Banco spearheaded an effort to recall an elected official. This official was in the pocket of Whirlpool and some of the most aggressive developers in the area.
In year 2004, we started a recall of one of the city commissioners. Matter of fact, he was the person who actually controlled the city. What we wanted to do, we wanted to eliminate him. But he was backed by Whirlpool. We had no idea that Whirlpool would go to the extent that they have went to in order to keep him in office. We were successful at the recall election, but Whirlpool, the chief judge, the chief prosecutor, and the city manager got together and decided that if we said it was voter fraud involved in this case, that they would set aside the election and they could arrest Reverend Pinckney and also terminate the city clerk, who they hated because Whirlpool had attempted to steal land and she actually caught him and they was upset with her. So what they was going to do now is probably kill two birds with one stone. They figured if they can get rid of Reverend Pinckney and get rid of Gene Nesbitt at the same time, they would accomplish what they set out to do. So they went straight to the prosecutor, who went to the sheriff, and they decided they would do an investigation. They went out trying to bribe people into saying things that wasn't true, and they was very successful. They went to several people trying to make sure that when they testified that they would say exactly what they wanted to say. This thing lasted for over a year. And then April the 19th, the Reverend Edward Pinckney was arrested and charged with voter fraud, four felonies and a misdemeanor. His bond was set at $100,000 cash in order for him to get out.
Phil Bassett of the Kalamazoo Voice interviews Dorothy Pinckney about the charges of voter fraud against her husband, Reverend Pinckney.
What are the reasons that they took your husband to trial?
Well, I think he voices opinion. He tells things the way they are. He tried to educate the community on the different laws and what's happening within the community. And I think that's a threat.
The reason he was charged with voter fraud, why would they charge him with this?
I truly believe just to silence him, keep him quiet so he will not interfere in any plans that they may have for the city.
Reverend Edward Pinckney.
We decided that we was going to fight this to the end. April 14th, the judge set aside the election. After they arrested me and I was out on bond, they set a trial date for me. First, they set it in August. Then March 14th, 2006. Was the actual trial date. It lasted for 2 weeks. We knew that their witnesses were not credible. They went and got all the drug dealers in the community, paid them $400 to $500 to come in and testify. They even went inside the jail trying to find somebody who would say that I paid them to kill a witness. We knew for a fact that they was going to do anything they could to convict me. It didn't make a difference to them whether I was innocent or guilty. They found nothing that would incriminate me or connect me to anything what they were saying. And at this time, we was pretty comfortable about the outcome of the trial. So my only thought was to make sure that we stay on top of what we do and make sure that our answers was correct and make sure the information we had was truthful. And that's what we banked everything on.
Reverend Pinckney's trial resulted in a hung jury. Here are some responses from the community. Belinda Brown.
Thank God Pastor Pinckney have not been convicted in this nonsense. But now it's time for the community to be outraged about the fact that they have wasted the taxpayers' money.
Phil Bassett.
The prosecution's case seemed to be made up of a lot of hot air. There wasn't any hard evidence on anything that they said. They just seemed to be grasping for straws.
Pinckney's lawyer, Tat Parrish.
I would hope that this would not deter him in the future, but the expense, the emotion, the danger that goes with this sort of trial always carries with it a strong price tag in First Amendment values.
After the hung jury, the prosecution moved to retry Reverend Pinckney.
The next trial date is September the 19th. We expect my team of lawyers to be ready. Because what we're going to do at our next trial, we're going to train some laws. For the next 20 years, they're going to use this case law. Anytime that there's an election or they're claiming there's fraud, they're going to go back to Benton Harbor. They're going to remember Judge Maloney set aside an election because he said he believed that there was voter fraud because Reverend Pinckney was involved. And that's going to be the standard now. For him to set aside the election is the biggest issue that we got going for ourselves. That's what we should be fighting for. We should be sitting down and say, well, no, you don't have the power to set aside an election and change the law. But nobody stood up and fought that. People were more concerned about me going to jail. Don't think about me. Think about the election. If you're just going to do it just for me, we're losing this battle. We got to think about coming back right now and fighting to have this election reversed some kind of way.
Phil Bassett and Dorothy Pinckney.
What can people do that maybe aren't as brave as your husband, but they see what he's doing, they like it, and they want to help him? What can people do?
Well, one of the first things I think people should do is just pay attention to what's really going on and not take it nonchalant like, oh, this is just hearsay, you know, I don't believe it. And most people here don't believe things until they happen, and when it happens, it's really too late for them to do anything.
Your husband, Reverend Pinckney, he criticizes a lot of public officials, prosecutors, judges, and so on. Is there as much corruption as he's talking about in the city?
I believe so, because I've seen it hand on hand. I also have visited the courthouse and sit in different cases, and I see the prejudice, and it's like there's two law books, one for the haves and the one for the have-not. And for instance, a young black man and a young white man can be convicted of the same crime, but the young white man will get probation or a fine, and the young black man more or less would get time. Any leader who stand out front, you know, and voice their opinion and concern about the people in the city, sure, they're going to face the judges and prosecutors, you know, because they more or less fear my husband, because he is in the community and he is being boisterous and he is letting the people know, you know, what's going on in the city. And he stand for right. He's just concerned. You know, and I believe that's how most ministers are. Your first priority is to be concerned about the people. People say, you know, they don't like what's going on in the courts, but they're not going to speak up. But once they get a chance, they'll say, hey, I support you.
This is People's Tribune Radio. Reverend Pinckney explains what the battle is.
This is not a black and white situation. This is the haves against the haves not. You know, it's the upper class and lower class. It's more of us than them. So what we have to think about and concentrate on, make sure that they don't put black against white. Because if you put black against white, then they have an ally. They have somebody fighting their battle, the battle that they should be fighting. You got to understand Whirlpool. You understand their main objective. They want to make sure it don't come down to the haves against the have-not. They want it to come down black against white. That's how they deal with everything in the city of Benton Harbor. They want to put you against me, me against you. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. As long as you don't touch them. You know, as long as you don't climb that ladder and get up there with them, you can fight down here with me. That's all they want. It's always remember, it's the haves against the have-not.
On March 11, 2006, a few days before the trial, a rally for justice was held in Benton Harbor. Activists from around the Midwest came to speak. What follows are a few excerpts from those speeches. Maureen Taylor, Michigan Welfare, writes,
"So we are representative of the kinds of people that are engaged in this particular fight. Each one of us is representing your block club, your community, the organization, your constituency.
Right.
We're in this room, and what we got around, left and right, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, this is a constituency of America. And I want to take you past going and voting. We got to vote because that's the system they gave us, and that's the only thing we know.
Mm-hmm.
Our society is based on we work, you get a check, you cash it, you go buy some stuff, you run out of money, you go back to the job, get a check, cash it. That's all they told us.
Yeah.
Okay? Now we got this big problem where we didn't been laid off from work. And now they say, well, you know, situations have changed. You don't have no money no more. So therefore, the car might have to give it back. House, can't live in it no more. Children having music lessons, that's gone. And the only written rule that I'm aware of that stood the test of time says Bible, says Quran. And it doesn't say nothing about when you lose your job, your house supposed to go. It don't say that in there. I've read the books. It don't say nothing about when you lose your job, you're supposed to get your car back. It don't say nothing about if you don't have no money, you can't have health insurance anymore. See, somebody else is writing another kind of document. And for whatever reason, some of us have been looking at them documents. And I say we need to go back to history. We need to prepare for the many and not for the few. So that means what we'll have to do up here, if we got too many people that's standing in the way of justice, we're going to have to figure out ways to get rid of them. Now, again, I'm going to go back to this voting situation. All we know is that. But I'm here to move you to another position. After we vote and we recall and we vote and we recall and we vote, and then we get tired of that, why don't we start using this new word, take over?
All right.
This no more, because see, they'll get us tied up with the Democrats, they love you, the Republicans, they ain't your friend, and then they'll switch it up, and then you know the Republicans are declare themselves Democrats, and the Democrats will start calling themselves Republicans, and we'll be standing up there, oh, woe is me, what are we gonna do? The heck with all of that. Everybody in here that deserve a house, raise your hand.
All right.
Put your hand down. Everybody in here who deserves a right to eat three meals a day, raise your hand.
All right.
Everybody in here, now listen to this one now. You got the right to enjoy a little bit of red wine every now and then, raise your hand.
All right.
Well, listen. What we got in this country is the capacity to build a house for every freaking body here.
Local resident Belinda Brown.
When Pastor Pickney say enough is enough, I have had enough. And like this sister said, they have driven me to the point where I'm going to take something.
All right.
See? Take it! And that's the kind of attitude we have to have about this system that we're in now. We want to shut it down and we want to take over.
That's right.
Because when it's corrupt, far as I'm concerned, it's over. Enough is enough. And everybody that here that know Benton Harbor, you know that Benton Harbor is corrupt. We know the system, but you see, I get high on praising God. See, that's my secret. Hey! That's my secret. See, and when the enemy come in like a flood, I serve a God that will lift up a standard against him. See, I know who got my back, you know, because the Bible said we perish because of a lack of knowledge. But you don't have to stay that way. Ignorance, you don't have to stay that way. And thank God for Pastor Pickney, because he is one man that have knowledge, that have helped a lot of our young people on how their system is over there, and have exposed the way they're running that system. And I mean, have really caused them to get really upset. So we know that they're out to get him.
Longtime revolutionary and author Nelson Peary.
I've been in this struggle since the middle 1930s. It's a long time. I'm 83 now, and I have no intention of laying down my sword and shield till this war is won. I've learned some painful lessons in this last period of time. The first of these lessons is a simple one. The lesson is this, that people are most easily conquered when they don't realize they're at war. Now, the Europeans came to the Americas. They came with the intention of waging war. But the Indians did not understand they were at war, so they met them with open arms. They cured them. They fed them. They set them back on their feet. And when the Europeans regained their strength, they slaughtered them. Do you think the Europeans enslaved the Africans? Not at all. The Africans first enslaved the Africans and sold them to the Europeans. And because those Africans didn't realize they were at war, and they didn't realize it until after they had sold their own countrymen, the chains were clamped on their legs, then they understood it, they were at war, but it was too late. We're at war. Not all the poor people in Benton Harbor are going to trial next week.
but they are all going to war. That war is raging in New Orleans. Yeah. Yeah. I've been given what, $90 billion that disappeared like smoke all along the Gulf Coast during war. Finally, in summation, I want to say what every old person says. Don't dishonor your forebears.
That's right.
Yeah. Think about the suffering, death, and the turmoil that they went through to secure for you the little rights that you do have. They fought and suffered to attain freedom, justice, a home, education, and health care that you today should consider are the rights of every human being.
That's right.
And these are the rights that you're going to have to defend. When you defend Reverend Pinckney, what are you defending? Some guy that's just a nice guy? No, you're defending justice. Be on guard and be ready to march. Because there are still many kinds of slavery. Mm-hmm. And the worst kinds of slavery is the enslavement of one's mind. Uh-huh. So we still are in battle against slavery.
All
so
right.
When you go out there this afternoon to that courthouse to make that march, march like men of war, like Joshua's men of war that they spoke
right.
And in your heart, you sing that song.
Yeah.
Before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave. I'll go home to my Lord.
All right.
Reverend Pinckney reads a brief piece from the People's Tribune that explains his case's significance both historically and for today.
In 1985, 10 years after the passage of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, 8 voting rights activists from Alabama was indicted in voter fraud investigation. They had helped people fill out ballots they claimed using voting machines and voter absentee, and they had started to win some local elections. See, anytime you start winning, they get mad. Anytime you have someone like Whirlpool here who dictates to the people what needs to be done, and if you don't follow them, you got a problem with them. But the thing is, we can have a problem with Whirlpool because we showed that we can beat them. We beat a billion-dollar company. We spanked them good, and we're going to do it again. This is just the beginning.
Across the country and world, the ruling class is being forced to find ways to continue to make profits and grow their wealth. One method is gentrification and so-called development. This most often occurs on once profitable industrial land as a means for landowners to bring value back to their properties. As we have heard, this kind of development is a painful process for the vast majority of people living in places subject to it. As people stand up to fight this process, the ruling class uses any scheme they can, from claiming bankruptcy to get out of their obligations to creating phony charges to overturn elections that don't go their way. We cannot let the wealthy dictate the development of our communities. What's important from Benton Harbor is that we all stand together and call for an end to the injustice and deceit. When we use all our resources and passions to not only resist this system but to transform it, we can then create a better world. A world based on a cooperative society in which the land, factories, resources, and wealth are owned by all, for the benefit of all, and not just for the few who currently use it to rule over our lives. That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Every month, PT Radio, in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribuno del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America, attempts to share with you information and visions for a cooperative society, where everyone can have a proper quality of life. To find out more information, please call 1-800-691-6888. Once again, 800-691-6888. Or visit us online, www.ptradio.org. I'm Kenny Shook. Thanks for listening in, and please join us next time for People's Tribune Radio.